Welcome to the Consulting Success Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Zapersky. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into the world of elite consultants, where you'll learn the strategies, tactics, and mindset to grow a highly profitable and successful consulting business.
Hey, everyone. It's Michael Zapersky, and today I'm here with Ari Gulper. Ari, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Appreciate it.
So, Ari, you've been featured in the likes of Forbes, CEO Magazine, Inc. Magazine, really for your expertise in sales. You're a best-selling author. You have clients in 35 countries. And your sales methodology, which I've experienced firsthand when I was in Sydney recently, kind of got a little taste of it at a workshop that you were putting on. We'll talk more about that. But you've helped many companies really to transform their approach to sales and the results that they get from that. Take us back to your early days. How did you even get into sales?
Well, it started really when I was actually, believe it or not, I was selling advertising at university to pay my way through. And we used to sell the little coupons, like at the auto shop, where you can click a hole through it, and they give you an oil change and check your battery. It like little coupons, like go door to door. And then from there, I sold advertising into what was back then called the mobile yellow pages. It wasn't online. It was a physical book that went in your glove compartment in Seattle. So it was like a mini yellow pages. And I'd go to businesses there. And I remember I created something called a pizza close on my own. What that meant was before I met with an owner of a business, I looked at their ad in normal yellow pages ahead of the meeting. And I create three mini ads for them for our book, which would be a small size, a medium size, and a large size, kind of like a pizza. And so I go in there and tell them what we do. And I say, look, here's what I recommend. You can choose one of these options here to start out and give it a try and see how it goes, a test. So every time I lay out all three sizes, they choose a medium every single time. They used to call me Ari, the pizza clothes guy, because it was like medium. And that was kind of fun in the early days.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think, classic kind of psychology right around the pricing and anchoring of three options that a lot of people still aren't using, but really should, because it can be highly effective. All right. So that's kind of how you got your early start in sales. How did you progress from that into actually becoming a consultant and coach and speaker and author in the area of sales? What did that progression look like for you?
So just to help frame everything here, I have a niche specialty, and that is called trust-based selling. So I'm not a generalist in any way around selling. A category of one about this unique IP around trust-based selling, which we'll talk about in a minute. But there's a story behind this that happened to me that kind of woke me up to this area I investigated for many, many years, got really good at doing. And here's the story. So many years ago, I used to be a sales manager of a software company, where we managed about 18 people underneath me, and we launched the first online website tracking data collection tool to collect website behavior. It's now called Google Analytics, as you've probably heard of that. But we first launched that product, and a lot of interest about the offering. And my job was land very large accounts. So one company had contacted me for a demo, and I got the lead myself. It was such a big opportunity that if I close this one sale, it'll double turnover of the company in one go. So pretty big opportunity. You recognize the name of the business, quite large, a lot of websites, and the whole team is so excited because if I close this one sale, everyone gets a bonus for the year. That's how big it was. So a bit of pressure on me, but I was pretty calm about it. And we finally scheduled a call for a demo. I'll never forget that day. It was Friday at 3:00 in the afternoon, and it was myself and our director in a conference room. And on the conference table was this long, you know, the big speakerphone with three legs on it, the corporate speakerphones. I closed the door behind me. And I dialed the number that my contact gave me, and the phone rang. And there's my contact. And nice guy's named Jim. I said, hey, Jim, how are you? Ari, how are you doing? Good. And he says, look, Ari, I'm glad you're here. Let us tell you who else is with me on the phone with me here in the conference room on our end. And I was like, oh, wow, there's more people there. This is good. So next thing I hear is, my name's John. I'm CEO. I was like, oh, this is a good person to have on a sales call. My name's Mike. I'm head of IT. Oh, this is even better. My name is Julie. I'm head of marketing. I mean, everybody on this conference call was essentially a decision maker. This is the call we hope to get as often as possible because we know if they're all together, we're going to get an answer. So I was pretty excited about this. And so after they introduced themselves, I introduced myself. That described what we do. Then I began to give them a live demo over the webinar of our product to show them how we can collect their data on their websites. We chose one of those advanced as a prototype and showed them what it looked like live to actually see everything going through. And as I'm showing this to them, I start hearing noises in the phone call like, wow, this is fantastic. This is great. We can use this here. They start asking me all kinds of questions, you know, how does it work? How do we install it? It was almost like like a love fest on the phone. You know what I'm talking about? You've been there before? There's just so much chemistry going back and forth. I'm going and saying to myself, oh, this is so good. I got the high five from my boss in the corner of the room over there. He's giving me a thumbs up. And I'm relaxed. I'm doing my thing, answering objections. And they're asking me all kinds of questions. I get all the answers. I mean, really, there was so much chemistry on this phone call. It was just fantastic. And it was like a love fest on the phone, like I said. And so anyways, after an hour goes by, I'm happy. They're happy. You know, they said to me, Ari, this is fantastic. I can say I can use this. Thank you so much. Give us a call a couple weeks and we'll follow up from there. I'll follow up with this from there. I said, great. I'll be happy to. Thank you so much for your time. So I said my goodbyes. I took my arm and I reached for the phone, hit the off button with my finger. As I'm reaching for the off button on the speakerphone, by complete accident, I hit the mute button instead of the off button. And a small click happened, and they thought I hung up the phone. In that split second, a voice inside of me said, Ari, go to the dark side. Be a fly on the wall. Listen, and you got nothing to lose? And so I did it for a couple seconds. I pulled my thumb back. They thought I hung up the phone, and they started talking amongst themselves. And I know you know the story of what happened here, but you can imagine what most people think that they would say after a call like that would be fairly reasonably positive things. But let me share with you and your audience what they said verbatim, word for word. I'll never forget it. That's why we're here today. What they said was this. They said, we're not going to go with him. Keep using it for more information and make sure we shop someplace else. Ouch. Knife and heart twist. I was, Michael, in a state of shock. I could not believe it. After all that, and I finally shook, you know, kind of snapped out of it, hit the off button, looked at Walt and said to myself, what did I do wrong? I was professional. I was friendly. I was really competent. And the first thing that hit me was this, and I'll see if you agree with this, that somewhere along the way, it has become socially acceptable not to tell the truth to people who sell, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think a lot of people resonate with that. They have that feeling of sales being uncomfortable. I think of the used car salesperson. It's the whole kind of mindset around sales that a salesperson is, you know, sneaky and persuasive and isn't being forthright or isn't, you know, doesn't really have your back and really isn't there to serve you. They're there to serve themselves.
Yeah. So my big realization was I asked myself, why were they afraid to tell me the truth? And I realized that moment that somewhere along the way, it has become socially acceptable not to tell the truth to people who sell, right? It's okay to say things like, sounds good, send me information. I'm definitely interested without having any intention of buying. And I asked myself, why that's going on? And I realized the reason why is there is a subtle flow of pressure underneath every conversation you have pre-sale with a potential client. Now, you can't see it and they can't see it, but both of you can definitely feel it. And if you don't consciously remove the pressure from the sales process, they'll never feel comfortable telling the truth up front. You always have to chase them to the end, hoping you get the deal. And that's when I realized that moment, there's a whole new way of looking at this. Now I created a whole new mindset concept where the idea is to no longer focus on the end goal anymore, but to focus only on the truth of whether you and them are fit or not up front and how to build enough trust with them. So in the beginning, you create enough openness so you know where you stand. You're not chasing what I call ghosts, people who say, yeah, sounds great. And you keep chasing, assuming chasing is part of the game. That became a whole premise behind our what we call unlock the sales game concept, if that makes sense.
So Ari, before we get into that, because I definitely want to dive deeper into the trust-based selling and the unlock the game and just everything that you've kind of built up over the years here, which is quite extensive. But now take us back to that time where, you know, you're working at that software company, things didn't go well, and fast forward a little bit. How did you, you know, go from technology company to now actually starting to take this realization that you had and actually build a business around it? Who was your first client? How did you get into that space?
Sure. Well, I'll tell you the journey that kind of flowed from there. So after that experience, I actually quit my job and I said to myself, you know what? I've got to really build out this concept more effectively. So I created a little ebook. It was like 20 pages long, and I had a website, and I sold it for $1 a page. That's kind of how I justified it. It was $20. And it was all about how to sell that with trust and not chasing people. People started buying it. It was that early days online, you know, and it wasn't getting enough traction. So I decided to add, which back then was kind of innovative, a live chat button. And the button said, chat with Ari now. And I was literally as me. I was live behind my computer, like, waiting there, and someone would click the button, and they start chatting with me, and they go, "Is this really Ari Gelber?" I'm like, "Yeah." They're like, "Well, what?" Else? They're like, "Well, how are you have time to talk to someone like me?" And I'm like, "Well, what else should I be doing? Be talking to clients?" So that's when I began to realize back then that there is a way to develop your positioning and to become perceived as an authority, as a category of one, with different approaches. And that's where I began to get the understanding of authority and positioning. And then I built everything out from there. I did my first workshop at a local mall, got a few clients. Then I started on the path of becoming a class expert around building some books and getting really smart around becoming what I call a trust authority.
So I think we've talked a little bit about the challenges that a lot of people have when it comes to sales, but let's go now a little bit deeper into kind of the trust-based selling, this whole area that you've really spent your career on, maybe by starting off and just kind of identifying some of the most common mistakes that people make and then how to approach it in a more effective way. So even, one or two common mistakes that stand out there for you and that you see all the time, Ari, and then how have you found a more effective approach to solving them?
Well, what might help to couch that is a kind of premises around typical myths or issues that people, a lot of consultants actually still have in the back of their mind because they've been conditioned the old way. One might, it's a very common one, which is sales is a numbers game. That's a very common myth that most consultants grew up with in their old sales kind of life. And the challenge with that is, the concept behind that is the more contacts you make, the more clients you get. That's the concept. What we discover in this economy now, it's not about how many contacts you make. It's about how deep you go on each conversation, how good you are at trust building, not how good you are at just making more contacts, expanding your networks. And that's the whole shift is, are you effectively building trust with people or are you selling something to them? That really begs the question, because if you are trying to sell something to somebody, that you can create an unconscious perception of yourself as selling them as a consultant. You don't want to lower your positioning around that. That's number one.
So, Ari, before you go on, it totally does. I want to play the devil's advocate for a moment. Like, I see, I can sense, like my spidey sense is going off that some, people listening right now are going, well, but Ari, if I'm not thinking about sales, if I'm not thinking about making an offer, then how can I generate business? How can I just provide only value and only serve and only try and help with, aren't people just going to take my knowledge from me and then not engage me? So what can you offer just in terms of maybe a practical response to that? If you're not going there with the idea of selling to someone, then what should people be doing? And we could use, even LinkedIn as an example. A lot of people today will think it's all about a numbers game. You need to reach out as many people as you can, use automation tools, all kinds of stuff. It's just, sending the same message to the same, to a whole bunch of different people. And hopefully one of them kind of raises their hand. You're saying, no, you're much more targeted than that. You need to invest in the relationship. But how do you go about adding value and building the relationship if you're not thinking about sales and selling to that person?
All right. Well, in your question, you have tons of inroads. But let me try and condense this. Number one, you have to know exactly who your ideal client is. An ideal client I define as the one that you deliver your value with the least amount of effort and the highest margin. That's the happiest client ever because they appreciate you the most. You're making the most from them and they're happiest with you. The other thing is, if you are thinking about the sale when you're engaging somebody, either on LinkedIn or live on the phone or an email, you're not being 100% present on them and their issues. And that's the problem. It's a total mindset shift and it's not easy to let go of the end goal. Because here's what happens. Like, here's a classic example. A consultant connects with someone on LinkedIn who could be a potential client. They get on the phone with them and this potential business owner or client starts describing their problems. And the consultant says, "Oh, great, I can help you with that." You know what they do next? They do what I call free consulting. "Let me tell you how I can help you. I've got models. I've got assessment tools. I've got examples. I've got ways." See, they start jumping in and pitching their IP and solution pre-sale. And my number one rule is, do not give away your IP pre-sale. You should be paid for that post-sale. So rather than just giving stuff away and kind of doing what sales people do, which is kind of pitching what you have to offer, you shift instead and focus on going deeper on their issues, not jumping to their solutions too fast. When you go deep on their issues, then they say to you the magic phrase, which is, "How can you help me solve my problems?" So you do not have permission to talk about you or how you can help them until they say to you that magic phrase, which is, how can you help me? And you won't get to that phrase unless you're focused deep on their issues rather than your solutions.
Can we talk about the word that you probably dislike the most in the sales vocabulary that starts with an F?
The F word.
The F word. Can we talk about the F word here, Ari, for a moment? I was in Sydney, Australia recently with my family, as you know, and you graciously invited me to come to your workshop, which was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of learning for me in many different ways. But you talked about the F word, which is not what everyone is thinking right now. It's follow-up. And you said this is a word that people need to remove from their vocabulary. And I've shared this with some of our coaching clients and some of the other things that you kind of imparted. But talk to everyone right now about why the word, the F word, follow-up, is the wrong word to be using.
I'm going to use that from now on. That's great. Here's one of my number one rules, is you don't want to use any behavior or languaging that connects you to the negative salesperson stereotype and image. And we have it so conditioned in our minds, those are behaviors, we don't even know it. So one of my number one rules of all my private clients is to never again use the word follow-up in a phone conversation, on an email. And I bet you right now, probably your listeners are cringing, because in the last 4 weeks, I'm sure somebody has called somebody and said, hi, I'm giving you a call to follow up. The problem with that is the only industry that uses that primarily are salespeople. And the last thing you want to do is send to somebody the message that I'm calling you to move things to a next step towards my goal of the sale. So it's a very common thing people are totally unconscious of. So the answer, there's some other ones around that too, as you probably know, things like let's catch up or touch
base.
Check in.
The C word's no good either, people. You cannot use check-in.
Yeah, you got to remove all the languaging that basically attaches you to the stereotype you're trying to avoid. And so what you say instead is this. You say, I'm giving you a call to see if you have any feedback on our previous conversation, on our previous proposal, on our previous meeting, because feedback is going backwards, not toward forwards, because your goal here is not to create momentum forward, which is so contrarian, because most sales coaches tell you your goal is to move the client forward. And I'm saying to you, no, do not move them forward. Be present with them and go backwards, which is like, what? Because that goes to our concept, which is the sale is lost at the beginning of the sale, not the end, which is totally opposite of everyone else out there who teaches you to focus on the sale. And here's the problem with that. What consultants don't realize is they're losing their opportunities at hello, not the end. Here's how I'll do it for fun. So if someone calls your office tomorrow morning and you heard Michael, hi, my name is, I'm with IMA, and we do, what goes through your mind in about 3 seconds?
Yeah, it's going to be a sales call, and they're going to offer me something.
Yeah, it's a sales call, and the guard goes up, and now they're not telling you the truth anymore, and the game begins. So I'm not suggesting that your subscribers do cold calling, but I would suggest that in the entry point of their process, they are losing their best opportunities at hello, not at the end.
Mm. You mentioned cold calling. This is, I think, a point of contention, and there's lots of controversy, and people have different perspectives. What's your take on it? Do you believe that there's a place for cold calling in a consulting business, or should this be avoided at all costs?
Well, it works, but I wouldn't make it your first priority. But if you have no other medium to use and social media is not working for you and you're going to networking meetings and nothing's working, then if you do it the right way, it's very effective. But if you do it the wrong way, it's hell on earth. So it depends how you do it.
Definitely. So let's talk about something that is working better, and especially better for you. You do a lot of workshops, right? You make it intentional to get in front of the audience that you want to serve. Talk about that. Kind of break down why you use workshops.
Well, first of all, it's about positioning. Because when you are on stage or in front of a group of people, they assume you must be good because you're physically standing there. And that's number one. So obviously, it's the fact that you're in front of them speaking. That's number one. Number two is you have a chance to connect with them and build trust. And when I teach my private clients, my consultants I work with, do not over-educate when you speak. That's the first mistake almost all consultants do. And what happens is they leave the audience full. And only a few people come forward and say, oh, here's my business card. We should catch up. And the rest walk out the back door. I'm like, what are you doing? This could be your whole year in one talk.
So what should they do instead?
Well, what they do instead is they have to architect their presentation. So it's arranged around the core issues that the clients are having. And they unpack the issues with some direction and some ideas of how to help solve them, but not give the full solution because it's inappropriate to early in the relationship. At the end of the call, you offer them a complimentary consultation with you, but you don't just kind of keep it casual and say, you know, I'm happy to offer you all, chat with me, come on over and see me. No, it's got to be very systematic. So what I do, you saw me at my event, I offered everybody a chat with me and I gave them my book as a gift when those who registered, and the whole room basically got up, went back to the table with my staff there. They got in the line and they scheduled, my staff scheduled them on my diary with an invite that second, and no one left there unscheduled. There was no chasing. There was no follow-up. There was no drop-off. Everyone showed up. And that was like, you know, a massive inbound flow of revenue from that one talk because it was just architected in advance to give a lot of value without giving away the IP and moving to a next step, which they all enjoyed doing.
I think the other thing that I witnessed that you do very well is weave stories into your presentation. You're not just giving tactics or ideas, you're illustrating them through stories that become very real, very easy to grasp and easy to remember. And I thought that was really powerful. Just talk for a little, for me a moment. How do you think about using stories, or how do you kind of approach building out that presentation with stories?
Well, the way I see doing talks is a trust building opportunity, not an education opportunity. See, I educate people once they onboard as a client. Pre-sale, I build trust with them. And so essentially, the concept is that what you have to understand is that in the pre-sale process, your audience or potential clients are not trying to judge how you solve their problem. What they're trying to determine is, are you the one to solve the problem? They don't care what your models are, your frameworks and your tools, or how you solve the problem. What they care about is, can they trust you enough to enter you into their world? So I use stories around the problems they've got so they can resonate with those issues and they can say to themselves, this guy totally gets me. Oh my God. It's almost like he works here in my office. And that's the key, is you have to step into their world. Don't move them into your world.
You mentioned the ideal client, which, you know, we both know is so critical in all aspects of the business and making decisions and pricing and marketing. But when we were in Sydney and we were talking after your event, you know, you shared with me several things, and I just want to hit on one of them specifically here, which is that your marketing and your targeting, you're not doing what a lot of people are doing. You're not trying to go wide and broad and global necessarily. You're really investing in your local market, and you know, you're thinking about proximity. That again is a bit counterintuitive. It's contrarian, right? It's a different approach to what most people are thinking about these days. Just talk to us a little bit about why you made that decision.
Well, I believe in the concept of making money in the dark.
Okay, now that could be taken many ways, Ari, so you have to fill us in a little bit more.
Well, I figure you're starting to see the F word. So what I mean by that is to be invisible to everybody else other than your ideal clients. I don't want to be available to other people, competitors. I don't want to be in social media. I don't want to be where all the minnows are swimming in the big ocean. I want to go fish out of a pond where there are whales, and somebody else already steered the whales from the ocean into the pond, spent the money, spent the time. I believe in taking the path of least resistance to acquire the ideal client. My model is low volume, high margin. Not high volume, low margin. So most consultants say to themselves, I need more clients. I want more clients. I want more volume. I'd feel much happier if I had a full capacity. I'm like, what? You should never be full capacity because you need time to think, to create, to select your ideal client. So to go to where you were going with me earlier is that I want to triangulate where my ideal clients are congregating. For instance, I'm working on a new book next year. I mentioned that to you, called Engineer the Sale. And that's going to be targeting more corporate clients. And I know that my ideal client in that market is typically an entrepreneur or business owner who has a has a business anywhere from $10 to $15 million in revenue a year. That's my ideal client, entrepreneur, still involved in the business, still selling. And anyway, so I know that it turns out that that profile of entrepreneur buy Porsches. Like Porsche's market for 911s is that ideal client. It's the quite a match. So I investigated that. I drove down to my local Porsche dealership and I walked around and I said, do you do any marketing at all to your customers? I go, well, we have this magazine here that goes out every quarter, Porsche customers. I said, well, how many people is that? About 2,500 in our local area here. I'm like, oh, and what's the profile? Let's see. Entrepreneurs with businesses from 10 million to 100 million. I'm like, okay. So I'm placing an ad for my book offer, a free book offer, in the Porsche magazine first quarter of the year. Because one, there'll be no one there except for me who does what I do, number one. I won't be in social media where everyone else is ordering my stuff. And then I'm also just tested Golfing Magazine has a subscriber list here. And I did an EDM blast them last Monday with my book offer. By the way, it's not written yet. I just did the ad anyways to see how many would order. And we had a blowout of like 100 people. And they were all ideal clients. And said to myself, this is my whole year in one email blast. So I believe in pinpointing and targeting your ideal client and building out a system behind that that builds trust without me having to sell myself at the first meeting.
So much value here, Ari. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing some of this with us here. I want to ensure that people can learn more about you and about your work and about your book, Unlock the Sales Game, and then, of course, Engineer the Sale when it comes out. So let us know, where is the best place for people to go?
Well, best place is go to unlockthegame.com. Unlockthegame.com. There's a free test drive there. You can fill that information out and start getting my video clips. And if it resonates with you, under the video clip is a chance to have a one-on-one talk chat with me. And we can kind of talk through your situation and look at your plan for the new year and see if it incorporates enough trust and what your model is. And if you're chasing people, we can figure out some ways to solve that problem. So again, unlockthegame.com is a free test drive there on the homepage. We'll book there as well and just take it from there.
Awesome. Thanks, Ari. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Consulting Success Podcast. For more episodes and to subscribe, rate, and leave a review, head on over to iTunes. And if you'd like to develop consistent lead flow and a highly profitable consulting business, learn more about our coaching programs at consultingsuccess.com.